This episode is sponsored by Defeat Diastasis, a functional movement program designed to address core separation and pelvic floor issues. Defeat Diastasis Home is an 8-week program with simple, functional exercises aimed at aiding in quicker healing, increased strength, and improved function. Use code BIRTHBABYPODCAST at defeatdiastasis.com and receive 30% off on their home program. Thanks, Defeat Diastasis, for being our sponsor. The information provided on this podcast is for general information purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your qualified health provider with any questions you may have. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast. Reliance on any information provided here is solely at your own risk.
Welcome. This is Birth, baby. Your hosts are Sierra Morgan and Samantha Kelly. Sierra is a birth doula, hypnobirthing educator, and pediatric sleep consultant.
Samantha is a birth doula, childbirth educator, and lactation counselor. Join us as we guide you through your options for your pregnancy, birth, and postpartum journey.
Hey y'all, today we are going to talk about how the heck you choose a pediatrician. We get asked this all the time. People are constantly in search of a pediatrician. So Samantha, do you want to start us off on a little bit of information?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I think choosing a pediatrician is harder than it maybe needs to be because there's, and also not as complicated as it sounds. It's kind of a little bit of both, right? Like there's a lot of options out there. There's a lot of different like approaches to pediatrics. There's a lot of different things that, you know, you need to be considering. But I think that, you know, the first thing to think about is, you know, what are your goals in your care? Are you planning on breastfeeding? How do the pediatricians you're looking at approach breastfeeding? You know, are you planning on vaccinating? How does that pediatrician's office approach vaccinating? How do they do their scheduling? Do they have like separate waiting rooms or separate things for sick kids versus well kids? Are they a family doctor? Can your whole family go see them? Or do they just see children? Like there's so many different things to think about. And when you're thinking about it, I think your personal priorities are going to be really important with that. So I think number one, you know, a lot of parents really get overwhelmed when choosing a pediatrician when you're pregnant. Some pediatricians do allow interviews, but a lot of them don't really do interviews, or they do like a monthly, like meet the doctor Zoom call sort of a thing. There's different, you know, everybody's gonna have different things, but if they, you know, don't allow interviews, you can always call ahead and talk to the staff at the front desk, get an idea of how are they listening to you? How are they answering your questions? Just how do they seem when you call? Likely that's who you're going to be talking to the most when you call and, you know, your kid is sick or has a ear infection or whatever. So talking to them and figuring out like, how are they responding to you is going to be really helpful, for that. So how you feel when you call is really important.
Yeah. I think another with the interview piece of that is it really depends on their model of care. So some pediatricians' offices, you filter through a bunch of pediatricians, right? Like you might have one with one this time and next time you might see a different pediatrician. There are some, like in Austin, we have one, I'm not going to name names because it's not my favorite, but they have like one main pediatrician and a bunch of nurse practitioners that work for that pediatrician. And the nurse practitioners are actually the ones that you meet with. And they're kind of just mockingjays for all of what the pediatrician thinks. And you can't really choose because it's based on your zip code with that one, on who you see. So if you haven't already listened to our episodes about jaundice and fevers, those were two pediatricians that are with a local company as well, but that one is a different model of care. So that one is where you actually, they don't even take insurance. It's like a subscription-based sort of one where you pay by the month. And it includes all of your visits, texting the doctor, asking questions, sending a picture of a rash, that sort of thing. Is that important to you? Because, I mean, my doctor, I can't do that, but my doctor takes my insurance and those doctors don't. And for us, it's a financial decision where we weren't able to afford that at that time, when our kids were really little. So, that doctor's office that from those pediatricians, they actually do very long interviews. We had one, I think we have a client that had, I think it was a 30-minute slot with Dr. Whitaker. And they were like, we had him there for over an hour and he never acted annoyed. We couldn't believe he really just sat and answered all of our questions. So I think that that's a big piece of it is how much do you need? Some people are more type A and they need, and I can say that because I am a type A person, they need a little bit more. And then other people are super chill and relaxed and like it's really going to be fine. And they don't need as much one-on-one care. Maybe they're fine with seeing a different pediatrician each time. Even a pediatrician's office I go to, if our doctor doesn't have availability and I want to get in sooner, I just get in with a different doctor and that doesn't bother me. But some people, even that would be too much. So ask what that model of care of like is like, just like when you had an OB or a midwife and they were on a rotating on-call model, or, did you see the same OB at every doctor appointment? It's a similar concept there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, there's really just so many things to think about. Like for in our family, we see a family physician, and so our whole family sees this doctor. And actually, my husband's grandparents also see this doctor, so he's very like intergenerational. And for us, that works really well because for me, it was a priority that it's easy. So we wanted somebody that we could all schedule all of our yearly visits, and it would be comfortable for my son to see him as long as he wants to. And there's lots of different options there. He has some really great nurse practitioners who we've seen more often than him in the past couple of years because we've been pretty chill. But there, my priority with him was I wanted someone who would trust my instincts as a mother. And, when I call and say, hey, I think my kid has an ear infection, he's like, oh, okay, well, let's take care of that then. And we can get that stuff taken care of really quickly. And I'm able to text him. He gave me what well, I went in and saw him in pregnancy with my daughter or with my son and interviewed him and asked him all of my questions. I asked him, how do you approach breastfeeding? What is your what's the deal if my kid's sick? What am I gonna do? What do I do when my baby's born? Like how do we approach that and all these different things? And so he gave us his cell phone number. He gave us actually his wife's cell phone number. He's like, if you can't reach me and you need me when the baby's born, call my wife and she'll get a hold of me, which was maybe not usual, but it was really, really wonderful. And it ended up that we did need him when the baby was born because he was jaundiced and they weren't going to release him from the hospital unless we could get him in with the pediatrician the next day, which was a Saturday. And so he came into the office on a Saturday morning to check my son's jaundice levels and tell us, kind of manage his care. And that was so huge for us. And made a big difference. And then since then, he's just been, my kids are older now. We don't really go in that often anymore, but he's always been so caring and helpful for us. And that was what we needed. And he's always trusted me and what I think about my kids and their
Like that's a
development
dying
and
art.
my instincts. I know, it's amazing.
It's honestly, and because maybe it's because we live in an area that's way more populated, but it just does seem like everyone is so overworked. They're having these little 10 to 15 minutes appointments, and that's, Dr. Whitaker shared with us. I think it was on that fevers episode when we were talking about it a little bit. He was like, I had to get out of that type of pediatrician work because I did not want to just spend 10 to 15 minutes with a family. I wanted to be able to look at the whole picture because there's so many things I'm missing to the puzzle. So another piece of that is, does your family have some special needs or, genetic disorders or whatever
Absolutely.
that you may end up needing more one-on-one with? And you might not be able to get that with a regular pediatrician that's seeing, a new person every 10 minutes. So another, when you were saying the thing about your family practice doctor, it reminded me too, if you have different modalities that you also like to use, like chiropractic or acupuncture, or you're a little bit alternative where you're like, you're not going to do antibiotics yet. You're going to put colloidal silver in their ears or something first, right? Like, think about those things, ask those things to the doctor or ask them, see if you can, even if they don't do interviews, you can call and ask to leave a message on the nurse line, and you could leave a message there, and I bet a nurse will call you back, or maybe they won't, and then that's your tell that maybe you didn't want to work with them. But say those things. If you have some things that like set you apart a little bit, and you're like, we're a little quirky, maybe to some people, try to scare them away. It's kind of like dating, right? You're like, I'm gonna scare them away early instead of
Say all
being
the
really
scary
disappointed
things.
later.
Say
What
the
a
inside
disappointing
thoughts,
husband.
guys. I know.
Yeah,
It's
say the
good.
inside things.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
I think so there's also some really important questions that, important factors that you need to be considering when choosing a pediatrician too. And I think that this is where it comes in really handy to be able to have those interviews or conversations with the pediatrician to ask these questions. So I would say, unless you have your very best friend who is seeing this pediatrician and you already know all of the answers about them, try to figure out a way to get in and talk to them. And if they're not willing to do that, then maybe that's not the place to be. But there's a lot of important factors to consider, especially in that first year of your baby's life. So, things like we already said, like, do they have a separate waiting room for sick kids versus well kids? And how important is that to you? Do you want to be sitting in the waiting room next to a kid who has chicken pox with your 2-month-old baby? Or what would they do in that way? If your child is sick, how many appointments do they have a day for sick visits? Do they do telehealth visits for, things that maybe they don't necessarily need to actually see the physical, child? They just need to hear that hacking cough to be like, oh yeah, that's bronchitis. Different things like that. And also, how do they approach breastfeeding? I think this is a really, really important one. To think about if you are planning on breastfeeding, do they support breastfeeding, exclusively in the first year? Do they support breastfeeding after the first year? If you're breastfeeding your 18-month-old, are they going to be like, well, it's time for them to get off the breast because, it's rotting their teeth and yada, 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 things that aren't actually evidence-based, but things that people say all the time. So, you need to know those things ahead of time. Maybe, that is the one thing that they say, that pediatrician does that you don't agree with and everything else lines up exactly, but then at least like, I'm just not gonna, I'm not gonna take all of that stuff as gold, when my doctor starts telling me to stop breastfeeding at 18 months or whatever.
And a breastfeeding friendly doctor, kind of like we talk about with OBs, like a VBAC friendly OB. Well, are they really? Because, like, what are they saying? What are they doing? So, a good sign. One of the things I was so impressed with when we did the jaundice episode with Dr. Lisa Gonzalez was she said nobody leaves her, she does a prenatal pediatric appointment with people when they're pregnant, and nobody leaves there without knowing how to hand express colostrum. And she shows them and helps them do that. So that they're able to, if they need to supplement after the baby's born, they're able to supplement with their own colostrum. That's amazing. Not that it's
That's
bad to have
huge.
to use formula or donated milk, but how cool is
But to
it
have
that
that
you could do it on
option,
your own? That is breastfeeding supportive, right? I mean, she is doing the pre-work to try to make sure even we don't even know if there's gonna be a problem, but we're gonna support you now to say if there is one, then we're gonna be able to fix that or help with that. We have this later on down the line, but I'm going to talk about it now instead because we're talking about these things that are kind of the check marks of is this a good doctor for you? We touched a little bit on vaccines. I will say, some doctors are okay with no vaccinations. Some, usually that's the ones that are more of this membership based, the subscription based. And that's usually because they don't usually take insurance. And insurance companies often have some sort of regulation with the people that they're accepting, claims from that it needs to be, have all these boxes checked. And making sure you're on the vaccine schedule is oftentimes one of those, I believe. So, you may or may not find that in a doctor who takes insurance. And in the Austin area, I think we have two, and I don't know if either of those take insurance actually. And then the other one is the subscription-based one that we were talking about. We've already interviewed with them. So it's pretty hard. Now, some take a delayed vaccine schedule, but you have to show that you're on that delayed schedule and that you're really going to sign up and do those. And For example, my pediatrician's office, when my son was born 6 years ago, they would take you even if you weren't going to vaccinate. But then they changed it. And then it was, we will take you, but you have to be on some sort of schedule to try to catch up. And if you aren't doing that, then you're going to be released as a client. And we never had insurance that even does vaccinations, because we're not on a normal insurance. Where ours, we have to pay for those out of pocket if we want. No preventative care is covered because it's more of a sharing program and not typical insurance. So I wasn't going to pay $150, even if I wanted to do a vaccine at a certain time. I'm not going to pay that much money for one vaccine. So we had to go to like the Shots for Tots clinic if we wanted to do it. And they were really okay with that. They said, okay, well, financially, we see that that makes more sense for you. Just bring back the piece of paper afterwards showing that you did it. And so they would work with us a little bit, right? It didn't mean I had to get it done there. And so I really respected that and liked that they would work with us for what worked for our specific family. So asking those questions about how supportive they're going to be of those things, what if you change your mind down the line? What does that look like? And they may change their mind down the line, and you may be looking for a new pediatrician. So that's something to consider too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think with that too, I'm just thinking for so many of the people who are listening to this podcast, we're thinking about the newborn time and that first, year or two of life. But, your kid's going to be seeing a pediatrician for, most of their childhood, really, until they're, I think you can see pediatricians until you're like 21 or something. I don't really know. But thinking through what is that going to look like as they get older? How, there's puberty that they're going through, there's childhood sicknesses that they're going to be going through at school. Like, oh, we have to have a physical for them to play this sport, or we have to have, this thing done in order for them to go on this trip, or I have to have a doctor's note because they stayed home because of this, that, or the other. How are we going to approach those things? How does that pediatrician approach those things? Asking those questions for the future, I think, is also really important because, for a lot of us, we just want to find somebody and stick with them and not have to go change doctors all the time. So if that's you and you're not wanting to have to switch later on, then ask those questions ahead of time too. Like, as my child gets older, what is that going to look like?
And your kid isn't going to want to switch. So if you haven't had a baby yet, let me just tell you, kids are not so flexible all the time, right?
It's
So
true.
my son is so way more comfortable with our pediatrician that we've been seeing forever than he is when we have to go get a random one. And usually it's the random one when we're the most sick because we're trying to get in last minute. Another thing to consider, I didn't even think about when I had a girl, but now I think about it that I have a boy, is that I don't know where, depends on where you live, but around us, the majority of the pediatricians are female. And there will come a time, I've actually seen recently a lot of these posts in mom groups. Sometimes I wonder if it's the algorithm listening to me and goes, oh, Sierra was, I didn't even say this out loud before right now, and I'm about to say it, but it's been coming up. It's in my thoughts.
It's reading your mind.
They, yeah. Are posting about like my 8-year-old, my 10-year-old, my whatever. My boys are saying that they want a male pediatrician. Does anyone have a recommendation for a male pediatrician? And so I had never even considered that. And there actually is one at my son's doctor's office, and they have like four locations now, and he only serves one of them. So at a certain age, he may say he wants a male doctor. And I want to be able to do that for him, just like I would want to do for a female child if they wanted to see a female doctor. So that's something to consider. If you have a boy, do you want to sign up for a boy pediatrician from the start? You may or you may not. That may not matter to you, but you got to think, are they going to be resistant to change as they get a little bit older? They might.
Very much. Very much so. Yeah, I think those are some really great starting places. So once you have chosen your provider, you've chosen your pediatrician, you feel like they're the vibe, they're who you're gonna be with for the foreseeable future, what happens in that first year?
Yeah, and also even before that, some people are really panicked about choosing that doctor before the baby's born. And that is ideal. It is easier because they are asking you at the hospital, which pediatrician did you choose? Even birth centers, who's your pediatrician? Because they want to be able to send notes or be able to communicate or whatever, have that in your records. So if you haven't chosen one, it's not the end of the world. But you are, what I'm about to go into is how often you see this person. And it's much more helpful if you've chosen before. And here's why, because the first appointment is usually within the first week of life. So if you're at a birthing center and you were released 6 to 8 hours after your baby was born, you're going to come back to the birthing center probably within the next 24 hours, or they come to you and there's some relationship there as well, but you're still going to need to have a pediatrician in the wings. And you may need to see if something else more medical is going on, you may need to see them. Mm-hmm. If you have an OB, you're not seeing them again until like 6 weeks after you had a baby. So you're for sure needing to go to the pediatrician if anything's happening, because they're not going to, you're not going to go to them with a potentially sick baby or gunk in the eye or whatever. So the first appointment is usually about days 3 to 5 post-birth, but anytime in that first week. Then we have an appointment generally at 1 month, 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months. And then after that, it's like 15, 18, and then they start to space out a little bit more. And at that first appointment in those first 3 to 5 days, they're going to do stuff like check the jaundice levels. Usually if there's any like worry about that, they're going to, you know, recheck those, do a weight check, make sure your baby's not losing too much weight. This is the piece where the breastfeeding part that Samantha was talking about is really important, because let's say your baby's lost 10% of their birth weight. Are they going to immediately panic and say that you need to supplement, or are they going to encourage you with how to help you get more of your milk into your baby? So that's a big piece too. We had a client, gosh, what, about a month ago now, and their pediatrician was like telling them they needed to go to the ER, that their baby's lost too much weight and wasn't peeing exactly the number of diapers that the provider thought that it should be peeing a day, but it was like one off. I mean, there were really strict guidelines that they had, and they were really stressing these parents out. And the dad was even like, I'm glad the mom's a little more chill about this and able to really digest the information they're saying and weed out what is true and what's not and what's okay with us, because I would just be taking my baby to the ER right now. So that, you know, they check for those little things. But do you want to go into, Samantha, kind of each of those checks throughout that year? I know a lot of people think it's just for vaccines, and yes, vaccines will be at some of these that they'll want to be doing those, but that's not the main point of these. So what are some of the things that they go over at these appointments?
Yeah. And I think one more thing too, before we get into that on the breastfeeding piece, something else to consider is, are they referring to breastfeeding professionals? Are they working with breastfeeding professionals? Some pediatricians do have, like, you know, IBCLCs or CLCs in the office that they can refer to if something is up. Or are they working regularly? You know, hey, I think there's something going on with baby's weight gain. I would recommend that you go see an IBCLC or a CLC, and going through some of that stuff. I think for me as a CLC, that's a big one. You know, if the pediatrician does, you know, they don't have a huge amount of breastfeeding training. That's not their, that is not their, you know, forte. Some of them do additional trainings, but that's not their whole piece. So really, we want to see them working regularly with other breastfeeding professionals, who that is our entire role, is taking care of breastfeeding concerns. So that's something else to consider as well when you're looking at that stuff and having some of those issues coming up in the first few days, weeks, months of life. But in those first few days, weeks, months of life, so I think, you know, if you are delivering in a hospital, like we said, you're going to go in probably the first, normally like 48 hours after you're home from the hospital. And they're going to check, you know, all these different things. They're going to go over like, oh, how did the birth go? How did all these things go? They're going to check baby's weight gain, make sure they're, you know, weighing appropriately. We want to see, you know, them starting to gain back their weight. We want to see babies back up to their birth weight by 2 weeks. And so if at that first visit, baby is, you know, lower than what they were at the hospital, then they might say, hey, let's go ahead and have you come back in a few days. And we'll reevaluate again the baby's weight and just see how we're doing. And they might have you come in, you know, a little bit more often than that, you know, 1 week, 2 week, 1 month sort of thing. They might have you come every 3 to 4 days just to see how things are going. So I think the weight gain is probably the biggest piece right there at first. And they're checking also, you know, their bilirubin levels. How does their coloring look? Are we concerned about that? Okay, then let's do a blood test and see what that looks like. Some pediatricians can do those heel pricks and blood tests in their office. Some of them refer out to other labs to do those tests. So that's something else to consider as well. And then, you know, the other things that they're looking at is the developmental milestones. How, you know, is your baby sleeping? How is your baby moving around? Are they starting to like lift up their head? Are they starting to reach for things? Are they tracking with their eyes? There's all these different little things that they're looking at. They're going to, you know, check baby's head, ears, eyes, and mouth and make sure everything looks right. You know, they can evaluate, some of them can evaluate for like oral restrictions and different things like that. They want to see like, do their ears get all cleared out from all that amniotic fluid, or is there something else going on in there? They'll look for heart rate and respiration, make sure all of that is looking good. They're going to look for this, you know, baby's skin. My daughter has a birthmark on her little knee, and she's had it since she was born, and it's kind of a funny looking one. It, like, it almost looks like a rash. So every new nurse that comes in and looks at it is like, oh, what is that? What's going on? We're like, oh no, it's been there since birth. And you know, it's just stayed forever, which maybe someday it'll go away or not. But you know, they're looking for those things and writing them down so that they remember like, oh yeah, she has that little thing on her knee. They're going to press on baby's belly to, you know, detect enlarged organs or hernias or constipation. Also is a big one. They're going to check their legs and hips to check for, you know, dislocation or joint problems or dysplasia. There's a lot of different things that can be going on, after delivery. Your baby, you know, you go through a lot in delivery. Your baby also goes through a lot in delivery. So they want to make sure that everything, you know, is still looking and feeling good after the hospital. And then they'll be checking baby's genitalia, and, you know, keep an eye out for any signs of infection or any potential issues that could be going on there. So those are kind of like the first few things, but I would say that developmental milestones are a huge piece of what we're looking for in the first year. They want to make sure that baby is developing appropriately, that you know what you know what to be looking out for and what things are developmentally appropriate for your baby at different times. They ask questions about like safety, like is your baby, you know, in a rear facing car seat, is in your car every time they ride in the car? Are they, you know, starting to roll over? Oh, okay, well, are you still swaddling your baby at night? You know, where does baby sleep? What does baby drink? All these different questions that are kind of safety that some of us don't necessarily know. Like, there's not really a manual on all these different things. So they are kind of your coach through that first year of like, this is what you should expect. This is what you should be looking for. These are the things that you should be doing to help your baby meet their milestones and be safe and healthy and well in that first year.
Which is why it's even more important to find somebody that you really trust, because you're going to be getting a Absolutely. Lot of advice from this person. So the things that Samantha just listed are not only things that they're going to do at the first appointment, but these are at every one of these well check visits. And then there are also some other things that are added at some of them. So mom and both parents really are screened if they're both there. Parent is screened for postpartum depression, anxiety, any sort of postpartum mood disorders. They should be screening for those at some of these well check visits. I know a lot of people that are not vaccinating say, why do I need to go to a well check visit? Because they're just doing these to vaccinate. So mm-hmm. I will give a different perspective here, which, you know, I always like to say both sides. I totally see why some people choose not to go to those appointments because they already know they don't want a vaccine. So they don't want to go and then be tried to talk into a vaccine. And they're like, I'd just rather skip it altogether. But there are some positives that can come out of these appointments. And so finding a provider that's not going to sit there and hassle you about your vaccine choice, if that's what you're worried about, is going to be important so that you can go and get all of these other things checked out. So if you just skip a bunch of these, we don't know if your baby is on their own growth curve. We don't know if, you know, some people are like, well, I can tell, I can see. Well, sure, some babies you can. My baby, you couldn't, because he was always so low on curve. I think he went from like 11th percentile weight. I think the highest he ever got was 23rd percentile, and it took until he was like four. And for me, I was just like, come on, baby, like, let's eat more. I'm constantly trying to get fat into that kid. He has my husband's metabolism, good for him, but it's really hard. And my daughter was always like chunked when she was little, so I never had to worry about her. So these things, though, we wouldn't know if he was on his own growth curve, or we wouldn't know if we needed a supplement with some sort of like toddler extra shake or something if he is falling off of his curve, because that's not only what his body looks like, it's how it's going to affect his organs, his brain. Is he being able to learn and function properly if he's not getting the nutrition that he needs? And it doesn't mean that I'm a bad parent because I wasn't giving him the nutrition he needs. It means that his body's just different than my daughter's body was, and I needed that extra little help to know what was going to be best for him. So, and I nursed him past a year, but still, like I joke that I make skim milk. There's nothing more I could have done. So there are things like that where it's, if we don't go to these, we don't know if they're not meeting their milestones. We don't know if they're sleeping properly unless you have friends that are sleep professionals or you're doing a lot of research on your own, which a lot of parents do, and that's great. But it's nice to have a doctor that can back you up and give you that extra bit of, kick in the pants to help you move in the right direction. And that can be a supportive thing, not an adversarial thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially like with those growth curves in the first year specifically, it's the difference of like half a pound to thriving versus struggling. You can't look at your child and I mean, even like the tiniest little newborn baby, I can't tell if that baby is 6 pounds or 6 pounds, 5 ounces, but that is the difference between, between doing well and not doing well for some babies. So if you, unless you have like one of those really specific scales at home that gets down to the tenth of a ounce, then you're not able to see that stuff. So I think that's where the professionals really, really come in handy. I mean, that's what they're there for, truly.
Yeah, and I think that if we just and I would go back always to birth because that's our realm and staying in our lane sort of deal. If this isn't your jam, you don't know all about all of this stuff, then having a pediatrician who does know and can see those little things that you might as a parent miss doesn't mean you're a bad parent. It just means you're not a pediatrician. So
You didn't go to
those,
school for 8 years to
yeah,
learn
you
all this
sure
stuff.
didn't.
They did.
Not for that stuff. Maybe you went to school for 8 years, maybe you're a lawyer, So another piece of, if you want to relate it back to when you're having a baby is there are people that skip doctor appointments during pregnancy because they don't want to be bugged about the Tdap shot, or they don't want to be told they need a GBS screening if they were not going to get a GBS screening. I know people that have skipped the ones at like 37, 38, 39 weeks because they didn't want a cervical exam, but they didn't want to go in and argue about how they didn't want a cervical exam. So they just skip it. But there are other things they're doing at these appointments that can be make it or break it for health and safety and wellness of mom, parent, birthing parent, baby. So it sucks when we don't have that relationship with whatever provider we have to where we can go in and be authentically ourselves. That's why we say the things you're thinking in your head before it ever becomes, because when it comes down to things like this, and push comes to shove, you're going to really need that person to be somebody that you trust and is on your side.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's so many different things, and I think that's also why it's important to choose someone that you trust, whose opinion you're going to value. If you're looking at that pediatrician and you're like, I kind of think you're full of crap, then you're not going to listen to them later either. So find someone that you trust, find someone that you get along with, that you can have a relationship with to some level, and roll with that, and trust your instinct. I think that's, we say that all the time when talking about pregnancy providers and pregnancy different, all these things in pregnancy. It is just as, if not even more important when we're talking about the providers that you're choosing for your children.
Doing it during pregnancy is just practice for parenthood. We're just all this informed consent stuff
Seriously.
we always talk to people about with pregnancy. We're always like, this is just going to help you in your parenting journey, be able to advocate for what it is that you need for your kiddo. So, do you think we missed anything, Sam? Anything left on your list?
I don't think so. I think we hit all the things. I think There'll be another episode in the future where we can talk more about some of these, more in-depth things like milestones and vaccines and what to expect at all those appointments in the first year. But I think this kind of gives you all hopefully a good overview of some basics of choosing your pediatricians and different providers.
Yeah, and if you haven't yet listened to our episode with Year One Wellness about baby's first year, go check that out. It's not as in-depth as we want to get eventually, but it is a really great overview. And we will talk to y'all soon. Thanks so much for listening.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on Birth, Baby. Thanks again to Longing for Orpheus for our music. You can look him up on Spotify. Remember to leave a review, share, and follow wherever you get your podcasts. See you next week.